JC2S, Part 2.
Number 4B.
So we round out now the adventure that we've gone from the Bible in our evolution through the textbook to this 16th chapter, which I had said earlier, now enables us through science and understanding to accept into our life and demonstrate in our life that we are that calculus. We are the same infinite calculus as Jesus demonstrated as the wayshore, as the prototype. And so mortal consciousness through the textbook has been debunked, and we have a state of divine consciousness here, a consciousness now which is one with the principle, a consciousness that allows that that principle which is God is our only principle, and that we have no other, we say, teacher, practitioner, government, or demonstrating power than that principle which is God. And we allow that principle of God to live our life, which would take us right into the model of being of the 7,000-year period, because that model of being, or what we call the chart, which shows just the language of spirit, we allow now that principle to play that language of spirit in our lives. We allow the principle God to let us be a transparency for the laws of the interdependence of the Word and the laws of the interdependence of the Christ and the laws of the interdependence of Christianity and the laws of the interdependence of science. We have allowed that melody to, we have allowed us to become the transparency for that melody, that principle plays in our lives as it does, as it did in Jesus's. So we now are that transparency and enter into the 7,000-year period, into a consciousness of only the synonymous terms, a consciousness of only those laws of being. And that's why here it says that in the epitome, therefore, principle and its idea is one, is impacting scientific understanding. And this also is a chapter that is not in a 7x7 matrix, but in the matrix of the levels, you see. It begins to get us ready for the 7,000-year period. There's a structure of the tonality of the different levels within here. It seems that the whole chapter has the tonality of science itself. It seems like teaching Christian science has, you know, a structure on structure. So teaching Christian science, even though it has all the other tonalities, has even a sense of Christian science, recap of absolute Christian science, a genesis of divine science, and the apocalypse of science itself, really showing within the structure that it's science impelling divine science, impelling absolute Christian science, impelling Christian science, which impels us back up through absolute Christian science to divine science, to science itself, leaving us through its structure with a scientific understanding which recognizes on all levels of existence only the idea of principle is going on. And with that ascending and descending sense of the apocalypse, looking at Revelation, we enter the 7,000-year period. And we enter it without Armageddon. And that's what Max showed when he came and did the apocalypse, that Mrs. Eddy said, if the textbook is taught in the to the world, if a platoons of Christian science are thoroughly drilled, and that her goal was that the textbook would be taught as a textbook in the world, and that spiritual future would be education in spiritual things along the symbols of the language of spirit. If so, we would overpass Armageddon. It showed that very clearly in his relationship between the apocalypse and Revelation, where he comes to the vision of the angel Gabriel and shows that with a consciousness of love, with a consciousness Mrs. Eddy shows, and Max brought out that Mrs. Eddy shows that with a consciousness of divine science, which the textbook brings us to here, that oneness between principle and idea, with a consciousness filled with the allness of God and its ideas, a consciousness of the all in all, where love never loses sight of itself. If the method of warfare is divine science, then that will have its impact on the universe, including man, because already on Genesis 1:2, when the claim came up that darkness was upon the face of the deep, How does Mrs. Eddy answer that in the Genesis chapter just before the apocalypse? That, how does she fight it? Does she fight it and say, well, take the Michael state of consciousness and bat, this is truth, so shall truth battle it out with error? She says, no, divine science is behind this chapter. And that the method of warfare, yes, it's truth, but it's truth from the standpoint of divine science. It's truth never losing sight of it, of itself. Therefore, she says, take that consciousness of truth, which we have here, our inseparable union with the principle, but take it from divine science. I've learned these truths in divine science, that God is all in all. And if love never loses sight of loveliness, that's our method of warfare. Not an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. That this healing work goes out to the universe, including man, from divine science. And if we see that this translation is only going on in consciousness, that this textbook is a textbook of truth, a textbook of consciousness. We heal the world through consciousness, not false theology, as she'll show. We don't have to go out and bang down the doors to get people to come. Consciousness attracts. This is what the textbook is teaching. It's science and consciousness. Practitioner, heal thyself. Heal your own consciousness. And in doing so, you'll heal the universe, including man. Because when you touch the idea, you touch the infinite one. She says we know if we were of the one consciousness in this classroom, we could heal the universe. So we say we're not worrying about time and space. We're not worrying about how we're going to get Christian science to the world. We only are concerned in the textbook on how to make ourselves the Son of God, how to allow the Christ to make us the Son of God, to be principle's idea, to be that divine infinite calculus. That is the physician healing thyself, which has an impact. How is that done? By maintaining in the face of error divine science. See, this whole textbook, it just has, again, that overall tone of that divine principle love. So yes, absolute Christian science is handling error, but always from divine science. Because when in Genesis 1-2, in the textbook on page 503, when faced with error, where it says, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. How does she answer it when we're faced with air? Through the angel consciousness, through the Gabriel consciousness, through the truth consciousness. See, truth that's behind this textbook. She says, you face it with that truth consciousness. What is it? She says under the marginal heading, spiritual harmony, when faced with air, she says, the divine principle and idea constitutes spiritual harmony, heaven and eternity. In the universe of truth, matter is unknown. No supposition of error enters there. And she says, all right, you handle it from divine science, from that universe of truth where matter is unknown. That's what you do when we're faced with error. And she says, and I'll show you how you do it a little more. You handle it from the universe of truth, but it has a... It operates. That universe of truth isn't static. That consciousness of divine science operates. She shows that, first of all, divine science is the word. She says, divine science, the word of God, saith to darkness upon the face of air. God is all in all. So when faced in the world with the belief that a Gaddafi can blow it up, we say, we don't give an eye for an eye, terrorism for terrorism. We go back into our consciousness of divine science that we've learned through the textbook, that holistic reasoning, and we consciously understand that in divine science, the word of God saith to darkness or ignorance. It's just done through ignorance. Error is neither person, place, nor thing. It has nothing to do with a person called Gaddafi. It's a claim of darkness against God. If it wasn't Gaddafi, we know it'd be somebody else. So divine science, the word of God, that consciousness says to ignorance upon the face of error, God is all in all. There's no place for error. That is just a false belief. And then divine science is the Christ. And anyhow, that light of divine science is the ever-present love, which is going to illuminate the universe. It's going to come right down to the universe, including man. The outcome, divine science is Christianity. Hence the eternal wonder that infinite space is peopled with God's ideas, reflecting him in countless spiritual forms. So that's Genesis. That's this 15th chapter that gives us that Gabriel method of practice. When faced with error, we handle it from the Gabriel standpoint, from divine science, by seeing if God is all in all, that all in all could never and has never been turned into its opposite, called life in and of matter. And we handle it from that state of truth consciousness. For with a consciousness, she says, filled with the allness of God, against such a consciousness there never can be any law. So she says in the apocalypse, if we go out from divine science and we handle every claim that comes against us from the absolute Christian science, latent error or visible error, from the standpoint of divine science, that is the all in all, and that just that all, that light illumines the universe, because where there is light, there never has been, is, or ever shall be darkness. And that is the method of practice that we take. That's the method of warfare we take. If we do that as Christian scientists, that we become so thoroughly drilled through the Bible and the textbook, through these 16 chapters, we will have that consciousness of a Jesus which did heal. And so therefore that healing will come again. But the healing has been lost, she'll say, through false idolatry in the medicine chapter. We have been chasing idols, the chasing of theology, thinking, well, we can only be healed through this or that personality, or through false medicine. We can only be healed through false remedies. But when we see that it's a whole consciousness that heals, practitioner, heal thyself. When we see when our consciousness is healed, there'll be healings. There's no healings because we haven't that holistic consciousness. And we know that with every age, healing takes a different form. Sure, in the earlier ages, there was belief and there were belief healings. Sure, there were faith healings. But we're at the age of truth. We're at the age of science and health. That the only health we get is through a scientific, holistic consciousness. If the practitioner has that scientific, holistic, pure consciousness and looks at the universe only as principle's idea and looks at every individual man, regardless of person, place, or thing, regardless of the claim against them, regardless of the claims that they put against us that aren't true, still having compassion on them, as Jesus said, that error is neither person, place, or thing. The world only does to us and to the world some through ignorance. It's not personal. It's an impersonal claim against God. If we can impersonalize the error in the world and just say it has nothing to do with person, place, or thing, it's some claim against mind, it's some claim against spirit, it's some claim against soul, principle, life, truth, and love, operating as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science on the levels of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. It's some claim against the laws of God and their operation. Then we have impersonalized it, and we allow God to heal the universe. We allow that holistic health consciousness heals, and that's the only one that heals. And we can see that's practical, isn't it? As it showed in some objection answered, that holistic consciousness heals. And therefore, she says, if we are Christian scientists, if we are divine scientists, if we go out from this consciousness that God is all in all, there will be no Armageddon. And Max shows that she totally jumps over in the apocalypse chapter, that whole point in Revelation of Armageddon. She doesn't even mention it. She says, if you've taken the textbook and digest it, yes, it's bitter. We know that through the Christ is the Christ. It went taking us from the physical to the mental to the spiritual standpoint to this holistic reasoning. It's bitter. She says, but if we walk and not stumble in footsteps of truth, if we just keep going, we become not sluggards in the race, just keep going and letting the Christ happen in our life, then we arrive at this standpoint of divine science. And if we do that, it will heal the universe, including man, and the world will not go through the Armageddon because we haven't made error personal. And against such a holistic consciousness, there is no law. And that's our method of practice, and that's what we have there in the apocalypse, which then shoves us into that practice as we have it according to the laws of interdependence of the model of being, which is the model of divine science. And that's where practice entertains that holistic awareness. Well, it's terrific, isn't it? And I think we love and stand in awe of this wonderful truth volume that Jesus saw was coming. He said it was the Spirit of Truth, and it's going to teach you all things. It has. It has given to the world, sure, in a little manger, not known to the world, a John Dorley who, through the textbook, as I said last evening, unlocked the Bible. The textbook is the key to the Scriptures. That's just why the Genesis and the Apocalypse chapter are under the key to the Scriptures, because she knew that it would be a consciousness of the textbook that would unlock the Bible. And it did. Dorley did it. And it was a consciousness of the textbook that unlocked the textbook. So we love this truth volume and its place value, which gives us that consciousness, that gives us, through science, the key of David to unlock within our consciousness the realm of divine science. So we love now this overall matrix of the textbook, and what I would like us to do this afternoon is just take this matrix and love it and flow through it and begin to see if you can reason through from premise to conclusion, from prayer to atonement and Eucharist to marriage, always, as I said, now maintaining the place value, again, just for repetition, because it's an exercise that we're going to do, so I just repeat myself. That when we go back home, to our room, that's a home away from home, that we, this afternoon, therefore, have that symphonic structure, that score, that we're always going to remember the first root category is truth. This volume is under the truth, science, and consciousness, and therefore impelling the A, absolute Christians, impelling Christian science. So we have truth. Of divine science, that all in all, impelling Christian science in its absolute and relative standpoint to bring out this subject of Christian science. So see if you can maintain, therefore, those tones as you exercise. I would, first of all, try it by yourself to see if you can do it. Then spontaneously, without appointing any groups or anything, spontaneously get together, if you would like, with others and drill each other on it. That's wonderful. And then this afternoon we will come and look even a bit closer. I have taken the method of a sculptor. I've given you the big view now of the textbook, and we're going to start focusing in closer and closer to the sixth chapter, and I will take up the subject then this afternoon. All right, so we go on and build up a spiraling sense that we spiral from a boundless basis, that unconfined basis of science and consciousness, the basis of truth. So we see and have appreciated this morning this beautiful matrix that Mrs. Eddy received through revelation and as a discoverer presented to us in the textbook. Big vision, big vision. And we'll see this afternoon now that whenever something big like this comes along, there's always the belief that it's going to be turned into its opposite. Oh, Christian science is just a small little cult. It's a little sect. It's dying out. It'll never do anything. Well, if you don't make it in Christian science, you know, one can always be a maid or a... It's all right, but one says to oneself, it's always that belief of spiritualism, that something big can be turned into its opposite. And this is what we're going to be looking at in a few moments. So we see that the vision is big, and we see that God is spirit, and spirit can never be turned into its opposite. So to handle that belief that this big vision can ever be lost within us or turned into smallness, into pettiness, we'll handle this afternoon by working with those laws that handle the fourth, fifth, and sixth chapter, those laws behind these chapters. So this bigness of spirit, the spiritual vision that we saw behind the textbook, we just hang on to from that standpoint of truth consciousness, that divine consciousness then that God is all. And if God is all, then God is all in all. And therefore, love never loses sight of loveliness. God never loses sight of God. Therefore, something big can never be turned into its opposite because love never loses sight of loveliness. Mind never loses sight of mind. Spirit never loses sight of spirit. Soul, principle, life, truth, and love never loses sight of itself. And the lesson for this afternoon will be that the talking, lying serpent will always come and take away, want to take away the child, to take away the vision. As I said, to turn it into its opposite. The false sense of reversal, where principle God reverses the false testimony of the physical senses and translates it back into God. Error says, I reverse God and make the big little. Take spirit and put it into matter. And so, therefore, we're going to see how the textbook handles this and how the right method of reversal is going on in this sixth chapter through that law of oneness, impelling the law of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science through that law of translation and retranslation behind that sixth chapter, which is the subject for this afternoon. So we will learn how to go out from divine science, to stick to that Gabriel standpoint, regardless of what the talking, lying serpent says in the world. We'll never make error person, place, or thing, but just some claim against God. And if it's just a claim against God, it certainly isn't a reality. So if we stick to the reality of God, then that reverses the false claim that anything else is going on besides God. That we are anything else besides principles, idea, and operation, that we are that divine infinite calculus. We always have been, we are, and always shall be. See, that heals any experience of the past. If we feel that we've had unpleasant experiences in the past, and we all have, we've all dragged our garments through the mud, so to speak. Well, not our fault, but mortal consciousness thinking us, whether it's physical consciousness thinking us through genealogy, through genetic code, getting some of those family characteristics that we don't like so well, or whether it's the mental, the astrological thinking us, getting some characteristics we don't like too well. Those false beliefs drag us through the mud. That sin sins the sinner until governed by science. So we will see and keep exercising all week how we see ourselves in the white garments. If one day you don't feel like it, then let's wear all white to class, as I said. If we don't have any clothes, we'll just put a sheet around us. We'll all understand. We'll know that we're not trying to play Mahatma Gandhi. Or we'll say, well, so such and such is just identifying themselves correctly. That's right. You know, it's interesting. I said this to the first class. It's always dangerous to digress a bit. But, you know, in that book on Mrs. Eddy, on Christ and Christmas, the fellow who did the pictures in the book, the paintings in Christ and Christmas, one day came up to her home, and she saw on the veranda somebody stomping up and down and back and forth and back and forth, and they were all black, black hat, black coat, black shoes, black everything, and boom, 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 boom. He thought, what in the world is that? And he thought, it must be Mrs. Eddy because that's her room. But he went in and waited for her, and a few minutes she came down very angelically and never quite figured it out, but figured maybe she was handling animal magnetism. So you see, she handled it. She dressed up the dark clothes and said, all right, we're going to get rid of these things. And I don't know, but that's his story, and it's quite good because, as I say, we at least can dress up in the white garments and as a symbol, of course. But anyhow, it's true that we have to see that we're always a fact and already fulfilled in being. We are clothed in the seven synonymous terms for God. We are clothed then in the white garments of consciousness. So we see then that truth is impelling the textbook matrix. And without getting involved, I would like to show you on page 105, a little bit how divine science is impelling the textbook matrix. If I leave the textbook matrix in front of us here, that's that matrix of Christian Science, which is giving us the subject from absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. I'll just introduce to you an exercise which I had also the class on the West Coast do, probably a little bit more involved. They spent a little few more hours with it, but I feel that if we just get the method, you can exercise it yourself. That if we see now on page 105, we get the matrix of the oneness of being. That has the tonality of divine science, which is behind every chapter in the textbook. Therefore, we would see how we could superimpose this matrix of the oneness of being on page 105, just right on top of the matrix which we have projected from page 102, called the textbook matrix of Christian Science and Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. So if we just saw how this divine science matrix just goes right on top of the other matrix, we then could be reasoning dimensionally. We could be reasoning holistically, always from the whole, which appears simultaneously in different forms, yet still remaining the whole, and then taking the impulse, the origin of the textbook, back always to divine science, that level where Mrs. Eddy discovered this subject. We know then that this is a subject, and I'll just reach for this book here, of The Science of the Oneness of Being in the Christian Science textbook by Max Kapler, a wonderful book. I know when it came out, we all have appreciated and loved this book in its beauty. It's really itself is a symphonic structure, really showing us in a very simple, clear way this concept of divine science, that standpoint of oneness as it impels the Christian Science matrix. So what I just want to introduce in the class, we already know and can exercise with this book. Now, we see then that this whole sense of divine science, then, that divine origin where consciousness is at work, where God is the all in all, always coming out of our divine origin, our true origin. That's where Mrs. Eddy showed in the textbook that she was born again. That's what we took right away at the beginning of the class last year when we did scientific obstetrics, and I asked if we'd take it to our room and really ponder and love how it brings out in that subject of obstetrics. We took the booklet, Scientific Obstetrics, booklet number 1, as free literature from the Institute that Max wrote, and could see in there how we are giving, that the Christ idea is giving birth to our new spiritual origin, we're giving birth to our divine origin, and that divine origin is divine science. So Mrs. Eddy said she handled death by handling the belief of birth. She said that the last enemy is birth, and we know it not. Therefore, it isn't death that it's our problem, but it's a belief that we were born into a material calculus, the belief that we were born in matter. Our problem is what she says, sensual reasoning, reasoning out from sense testimony, and letting the senses tell us what reality is like. That whole, we're born every day from a material calculus if we're reasoning out from sense testimony, if we're reasoning out from the problem and trying to go out from imperfection to reach perfection. That is a wrong reasoning. That's a wrong birth. That is not our origin. She said in the chapter that she was born again from divine science, that she saw that her origin was from God, not from the material calculus, and that all of our origin of our consciousness is always comes from God. And she says now always that will be true if we always reason from the Father. And showed us then that correct reasoning was always from mind, and that mind can only be understood through the idea which expresses it and never can be learned from its opposite matter. So we're born again when we constantly are reasoning correctly. And therefore, if we handle this sense of death, we handle it by our birth, our real birth from God. And that's what the only birth that has ever been going on concerning our identity.